Yeah, well, you've got to be careful. Well, lots of times now, because you just got to watch what you say all the time. You know, we all say things and then you don't even think nothing of it at the time, but you've upset somebody by saying something that you thought was pretty innocuous, and you've certainly got to try to think as best you can on your feet and, you know, engage your brain before opening your mouth.
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellon.
Hello.
Business end of the season. Very, very busy Easter weekend, wasn't it? Loads of football everywhere. And there was some comings and goings, wasn't there? Well, obviously, there was promotional and relegational comings and goings, but also some managerial comings and goings this weekend. Birmingham City said goodbye to their manager, Gianfranco Zola. Didn't even make a full season, did he?
No.
Less than half a season, I think, in as far as games played, I think it was.
Mm. Yeah, I guess it probably was. Yeah.
I think of only about 20 or so games. We're on what number? Number 297 for podcasts now. So finding new things to talk about is often very, very, very difficult. And so it's always lovely when things fall into your lap.
It's always lovely.
On the day that we're due to record the podcast. It's not as if we haven't got lots to talk about, because look, right now we've got the Champions League on in the background. We've got Bayern, who have just gone a goal up against Real Madrid. It's now 2-2 on aggregate, and they're looking for their elusive extra goal to see them through. But this morning we had the best of all presents, didn't we, Terry?
Harry Redknapp has returned to football.
He's back.
Yes. Harry is back.
Yeah, he turns up like Dirty Den every time the ratings on EastEnders take a bit of a dip. Harry Redknapp somewhere is tied in with the Sky contracts with the Football League to say, well, actually, come on, but, you know.
Ratings are down, boys.
Ratings are down. Come on, what are we going to do?
He's like...
Press the Harry button.
Yeah, he's like Frank Butcher in EastEnders, isn't he? You have to bring Frank back when you run out of ideas.
Yeah, or the Mitchell brothers.
Or the Mitchell
brothers.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. It's exactly that, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. He was like, when, aren't you dead?
Well, yes. But, yeah, the Harold Bishop.
Yeah.
Oh, good reference. Yes. Yeah. One for the teenagers there.
It's either that, or it's just because it's mid-April now and the tax year's just ticked over. So maybe it's that.
I don't know what you're trying to say.
That's unkind.
It's unkind, but it's a cheap shot. But it's one that...
But you took it.
Yeah, I'm never, ever afraid to take a cheap shot.
Yeah.
There was another interesting managerial appointment this weekend, although really just in a caretaker capacity. And Tony Adams is back in management. Now, Tony Adams has had a very, very long managerial career. Stretches back to 2004 when he took over Wycombe Wanderers, in which time he's probably got about one full season worth of management actually in that time. But he will be seeing the season out for Granada in Spain.
Who are bottom of the table, aren't they?
They are very bottom, yes, of the table. And looking very unlikely of climbing out of that particular situation. Lovely bit of experience for him again there. I don't know what the story behind his appointment.
He was a consultant. The new owners.
Oh, really?
Granada were taken over from the Pozzo family. I forget who the new owners are. And they employed Tony Adams, among others, as consultants. Presumably because they thought that he'd help them run their football club. And maybe he's based out there, I don't know. I know he did some work in Kazakhstan beforehand.
He was working in Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan, I think.
Yes, for Galab.
Azerbaijan.
Yes.
Maybe it's through connections that way that he got in. It certainly seems to be the kind of appointment that only, you know, a well-known name like Tony Adams can get. Mm-hmm. And they obviously ran out of candidates for the manager's job, and they've got him in there presumably to say, well, you know, you seem to know all about it, Tony, why don't you take charge of the team? And like a fool, he agreed. But I suspect he's just being a placeholder. I don't think anyone's expecting much, and I think Granada will be relegated. I imagine that that's what's generally expected.
Yeah, he's there just to guide them down gently.
Yeah, I mean, it's curious because he's brought in some interesting players who are out of contract, guys like Nigel Riococca. Again, maybe because they're probably just hanging around Spain, not doing anything. So they think, oh, come and work for me for a little while and see if we can do something. He fielded a team of 11 players on Saturday none of whom were Spanish, which raised a few eyebrows.
Wow.
Didn't bother to check the result, actually, but I'm going to assume. Interesting appointment. And people had a good laugh at his press conference because he doesn't speak a word of Spanish and, you know, he was gesticulating a lot in order to try and get across, you know, the fact that he had views and opinions and what was going to happen. So it's all been fun and games, but I don't know whether or not he's expected to help lead them back into the First Division next season.
I always find it a bit unfair when, I know you were just describing the situation there, he was gesticulating because he couldn't speak any Spanish, but it's almost like you kind of, maybe it's because it's reported by the British media, but I always think that the media in that country, Spain in this case, are always quite harsh on, let's say, English speakers that go that can't speak a word of Spanish.
Mm.
But when we have foreign managers here, we're all really excited about it. And even our press give them a bit of a break. Oh, he can't speak the language, but it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, he speaks the international language of football.
For the first month or so.
Yeah. Yeah, and once he starts losing.
Yeah. When they're not giving detailed English-speaking press conferences after about 4 weeks at the club, then they start thinking, oh, well, he hasn't bothered, like, you know, he's done
anything. Cuts into press conference time.
Yeah.
And cuts into content creation, doesn't it, after a while.
Yeah.
Pochettino was the exception. Because he had an aura about him when he was at Southampton.
Yeah.
He steadfastly refused to give any interviews in English, even though he was probably spoke better English than most journalists.
Yeah.
And it was only when he went to Spurs that they said,
"Well,
mate, you got to do the media thing. You got to speak English." And he was like, "Oh, fine."
I think it was a confidence thing.
I like to think it's because he wanted to project an aura of being above.
Yeah.
Sort of like, oh, he's so impenetrable because he doesn't even speak the language.
I mean,
and yet everyone knows what he's doing.
But do you remember when David Beckham used to give press conferences in Spanish and people were just like fawning over it? Like, oh my God, look, he's doing a press conference in Spanish. He's been out there a year.
Yeah. Like, yeah, but that's because it's David Beckham and everyone loves him.
Yeah.
Yay, he's speaking Spanish.
But you know what?
He's integrating.
I think it's more when it comes to this thing about the treatment that the press gave and social media gave Tony Adams, is that the press and social media do not like being surprised.
No, I suppose if you make currency out of having your finger on the pulse and knowing what's going to happen next or having a good idea of what's going on, then if someone comes along and chucks you a curveball, because it shows you don't have any contacts in the club.
Yeah,
you should have your ear to the ground.
You should have known that was
coming. And your boss is always saying, how come you didn't know that was going to happen?
Yeah.
I wonder how much of a surprise Redknapp's appointment was for Birmingham.
Well, it was a surprise to everyone that I knew.
Yeah.
I would imagine that it was a surprise to, well, everyone apart from Harry Redknapp and his close circle of press contacts.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. One of the reasons why people have been so critical of Redknapp in the past is because people felt that he got an easy ride of it in the media because of the ability to ingratiate himself with a number of journalists and how well he got on with some of the journalists. So it's curious that this seemed to have come somewhat out of the blue. But the whole thing happened fairly quickly, didn't it? Gianfranco Zola resigned or was resigned.
Mm.
And then, you know, within a very short space of time, they'd obviously made the decision. So maybe the owners had sort of had him in mind. Maybe they'd developed a relationship with him.
Well, he's another one who does a lot of consultancy work.
Mm. Well, I mean, he's been around an awful long time.
He had. But while it was a surprise today, on a day full of surprises, I think it's fair to say.
Well, yes, indeed,
That it's not really a surprise that he was the one that was appointed, given that, all right, he's got a big affiliation with the South Coast because he lives there and famously doesn't like to go anywhere. He can't commute. But he's got, like, 2 weeks' work there, hasn't he? There's only three games left.
Yeah.
And they are outside of the relegation zone, only just.
And just. And there are some pretty awful teams down there as well.
There are, there are. They've got a tough run-in, but it is only three games. If he can keep them up, he's going to get a grip, I'd imagine, a substantial reward for it.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks spent.
If his side get overtaken by Wigan and Blackburn, then like, quite frankly, he deserves never to work again in football.
Exactly. But he is the guy you call when you're in relegation trouble.
I mean,
it happened twice at Portsmouth, once at Southampton, and then he took over from
Juan de Ramos
And did pretty well at Spurs, but then he got distracted by England, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, he is brought in, and QPR as well, he was brought in there to do the same job. So he's up there with Sam as the guy you call, isn't it, when you're in trouble.
Tony Pulis, that sort of people. There's no doubting Harry's pedigree as a football manager, there? I mean, it goes back years. And the thing is, as well, is he did the whole apprenticeship thing there, didn't he, really? He started off as an assistant down in the third tier, I think, with Bournemouth, wasn't he, I think?
Yeah.
Then he got the job there permanently and was there for years.
He was there for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then he quit.
Yeah.
And then he was gone for a little while. He quit. I remember when he... It's funny how some of these things always stick in your mind, but I remember when he quit. And he said, oh, you just had enough.
Yeah.
You just needed a break. Well, mm. Actually, it wasn't that long before he was back working...
And did he go and join Billy Bonds, wasn't he?
Was he did, at, and there was a bit of furore about that because Billy Bonds had taken West Ham up to the first division, and then suddenly Harry Redknapp turns up as his assistant.
Yeah.
And the speculation going around was that the board at West Ham didn't have confidence in Billy Bonds as a manager, I should say, and that Redknapp was brought in to bring that additional experience and skill that Billy Bonds lacked. West Ham were relegated that following season, as it happens. And that's when Harry Redknapp was given the job, if I'm getting my timeline right. And then he took them up and stayed there with them for a while and developed his reputation as a top-line coach. I think I've got that timeline right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any remaining West Ham listeners will be able to correct me on that, but I suspect
we don't have any left now, not after
what happened last week.
Not after the unpleasantness last week.
No.
We're really sorry about that, by the way.
Yeah, we're really sorry.
We're really sorry.
His time there, he gave starts to Michael Carrick, Joe Cole, Rio Ferdinand and Frank Lampard, signed Stuart Pearce, Paolo Di Canio and Trevor Sinclair. That's not bad. That's not bad crop of players.
No, I would say
he brought them through.
He's always done well. Wherever he's gone, he's never made a complete balls up of any club he's ever been at. He's been at some clubs that have been on fire when he's been there, but basically he's not done a bad job with them.
No, I mean, in a career as long as that, there are some bloopers.
Yeah.
You know, there's the occasional Marco Boogers, isn't there?
Hey.
We all have our Marco Boogers. And of course, at Southampton, that was a disaster.
Yeah.
And that was always destined to be, because from going from Portsmouth, and I know he quit Portsmouth, but he was 5 minutes out of the door at Fratton Park before he was in.
Yeah.
He'd gone to St Mary's, and that just was ill-conceived, that whole move. But beyond that, you'd have to say he hasn't really made too many steps. I know he has a bit of a scattergun approach to his transfers, and that leads us to one of the other aspects of criticism about him is that he's seen as being a bit of a wheeler and dealer. And I think people are a bit distrustful of the motives of managers who spend an awful lot of time transferring players and buying players for reasons that perhaps are a bit too murky to go into now. But I think real listeners understand what I'm saying.
Well, Allardyce is probably the best person to compare him to, isn't he, really, in that sort of respect?
Yes.
What we're generally and unfairly called old-school English managers.
Yeah.
But also have slightly shadier backgrounds. But Ferguson had shady dealings in the background, didn't he? So
these guys have their preferred agents.
Yes.
People that they would rather work with.
Yeah.
Pulis is the same, to the extent where they would rather not work with anybody else. And that can rub club owners up the wrong way.
Yeah.
You do have to accept that as a consequence of taking them on. Let us not forget what was the name of that? Oh, he used to play for Blackburn, the centre half who used to play for Blackburn that he signed at QPR for something like £12 million. It was £12 million and it was an absurd deal, frankly, that QPR had absolutely no business making. And I think there are concerns to be had about managers like that coming in, and that by over relying on a certain number of agents and scouts, you can run the risk of eroding the foundations of your own network, your club's own network. So when you leave something of a vacuum. This is the worry, of course, that the Arsenal will have to face when Arsene Wenger goes.
Yeah,
is that he may well take an awful lot of that infrastructure with him if so much of it is dependent on him. As a person and his relationships with other scouts. And that's the package, that's the kind of Faustian pack that you make when you do deals with guys like Redknapp and with Allardyce, and Palace will have this problem as well.
Yeah.
Is that if you don't have someone else there who's cultivating networks and scouts and agents and relationships with players separate to the coach, that you can suddenly find yourself without players. I mean, look at United after Ferguson left. They were clueless. Couldn't sign players.
Yeah.
They struggled to even sign Marouane Fellaini, who the manager had a relationship with.
Yeah.
You know, that's how hopeless they were.
Yeah.
And this is always a problem that happens, I think, with some coaches, and indeed with long-term managers who are there for a generation, like Arsene Wenger.
Mm.
You know, Arsenal will have to deal with that when the time eventually comes that Arsene leaves.
Yeah,
it is slightly unfair, though, the shady reputation that those two coaches have got. Well, it is and it isn't, I suppose, when you think about what happened to Allardyce. But the point is, they're brought in and they're firefighting from the second they land.
Yeah.
They're in big trouble. Look at what Sam's taken over from in the last few years, with the exception of England.
You could say the same thing about England.
Well, I suppose you could. But they're brought in, so they're going to make changes straight away. And you're right, they're going to trust the networks that they've got. But they're going to make a lot of very, very quick deals for a lot of players that sometimes people aren't familiar with. I mean, Sam did that. It's Sunderland brought in a few players that, you know, wasn't on anyone's radar. Kone being one of them, and he turned out to be an absolute beast, and one of the reasons why we stayed up. So I think it can be slightly unfair, but then again, as you saw with Sam, there's no smoke without fire.
No, there isn't. Obviously, with the appointment of Redknapp, he is generally quite warmly thought of within the media because he's good business for them. He gives them lots of attention, yep. and
his window is always open.
Yes, well, I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to bring it up or wind it down. But I think that's what we're all getting at here. The panel of experts on Soccer Saturday are going to like a good old fashioned English managerial appointment in the Championship.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, rather than some nameless foreigner who's done nothing.
What's he done? Yeah. He's done nothing. They should give it to Ryan Giggs. What's this guy done? Nothing.
Yeah. Well, this is where I'm gonna steer the conversation onto now, because this is something that doesn't go away at the moment, as the number or the perceived opportunities for English coaches or British coaches, British managers, to get ahead in the game, and whether or not they're not getting the opportunities they deserve, or they're not getting a fair crack of the whip at the Premier League job.
So do you mean young English coaches British coaches in general?
I'm going to say younger British coaches, developing British coaches.
How are they expected to learn if no one will give them a job, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, is it the fact that if people like, you know, Mick McCarthy are given the Ipswich job, just to put what is supposedly a steadying hand there or something with a bit of experience, then someone who is perhaps lower down the divisions isn't getting a crack at that job? So are older managers, older, wiser heads, as much to blame as the glass ceiling as foreign coaches? Mm.
I think that, well, there's a couple of things there, isn't it? If you're the owner of a club, the higher up the pecking order you are, the higher the division you're in, the less likely you are to take a risk, because it is exactly that. But I think that if you've just finished your playing career and you are being touted as being the next manager of Manchester United, I would think that would be the wrong thing to do if I was Ryan Giggs. You definitely shouldn't be doing that. I mean, Gary Rowett, who obviously is tied into this story somewhat with
Birmingham.
He started his managerial career at Burton Albion before they were as high up as they are now. In fact, he's one of the reasons why they are doing so well. I think you need to start somewhere small and make your mistakes.
Yeah.
If you're gonna go somewhere big, I mean, AVB came in at Chelsea.
Yeah.
That's such a massive job for a guy that he was in mid 30s at the time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was never a professional. That's by the by almost.
Yeah.
But he certainly didn't have any kind of experience, and he hadn't made his mistakes at the lower levels. And I think that if you are a young British manager or a young manager, full stop, wherever you are on the globe, you need to do it at the very lowest level, I think, and cut your teeth there and prove it and move yourself up, and then you're not a risk to the bigger clubs, and then you can get in at somewhere as heady as Ipswich, for example.
Well, I think it's interesting, because I looked at the list of current appointments in the Championship at the moment, and there's 22 permanent managers there with Harry Redknapp. There's two caretakers there. There's only five of them are neither British or Irish. And only one of those has actually managed in the Premier League, and that's Rafa Benitez. But of the 17 full-time managers there, over half of them have managed in the Premier League already, to varying degrees of success, usually not, which is why they're down in the Championship. Mm. Is it right to say that when young managers are given their chance. Young British managers are given their chance. They're usually given very, very difficult situations to actually manage. I mean, I'll look at a few names that are currently managing in the Championship. Paul Lambert, for one.
Paul Lambert started off at Colchester, didn't he, and did well.
Yeah.
Went to Norwich and did well. But then he made the fatal mistake of going to Aston Villa,
yeah,
which is a bit of a graveyard,
yeah,
for any kind of manager. So
yeah.
I mean, he could be. You could look at him and say, "Oh, he made a poor career choice."
Yeah.
On reflection only.
Yeah.
Because it's easy to criticise people's decisions.
Steve Bruce.
Steve Bruce has had a good career.
Yes.
Steve Bruce has had a good career.
Yeah.
Wherever he's gone, he's had a good career. The only thing, the disappointing thing for Steve Bruce was that he didn't get given one of the really, really top jobs in English football, which I think he probably had demonstrated.
But, Should he have got the Man United job when they gave it to Moyes, if they were going to give it to a British manager?
It's possible that his star may have waned sufficiently by that point that they couldn't have done it.
Mm.
And, I mean, as we know, David Moyes was so anointed that it kind of academic, really. It was never going to be a consideration.
Mm.
But yes,
yeah.
On reflection again, yes. Knowing what happened with Moyes, they couldn't have done much worse.
Mm. I think you could have put in Mourinho after Ferguson, and I think that, you know, we've talked before about it being relative. If you can't achieve what... If the next manager in after Ferguson can't continue where he left off, they were always going to lose. And there isn't a manager in the world that could have done that. I think that anyone would have failed there.
No, so I think that's...
A little unfair on Moyes, I think.
Chris Hughton.
Yeah, again, Chris Hughton's had a good career.
Yeah.
He's had a good career and been
suffered
successful.
From the poor decisions of the people who he's worked
with. Yeah, I mean, spectacularly poor decisions.
Yeah.
He's been, and I don't know why, but he has. Hopefully, Brighton will allow him the opportunity to see it out.
Yeah.
Hopefully, Brighton will have the wisdom to give him a crack at the Premier League when they go up next season.
The other thing as well to consider is that, I think you said this a few weeks ago, you're not given much time to make a difference. It gets worse the higher up you are in the pecking order.
Yeah.
Someone like Hughton... is the darling of the South Coast at the moment, but may end up being, come Christmas, you know, finding himself out of a job if he loses, you know, 5 home games in a row or something like that. I mean, I genuinely hope that doesn't happen to him.
Yeah.
Because I would, you know, I talked about mistakes earlier, but it's not just his mistakes or your own mistakes that you have to learn from. It's also mistakes of the other people around you as well. And Hughton, I think, has probably taken a lot from his time at Newcastle, for example, and applied that. So hopefully it won't be the case. But I think that if you're a young manager, you've got to go in there and actually make an impact instantly. If you've gone in high up. And I think that might be too much to expect.
We are talking about young managers here, I suppose, but what sort of age does a young manager go up to? Because we've mentioned his name twice here now. Ryan Giggs is being touted as someone who should be given a good job in management if he wants it.
Mm.
It doesn't seem to be making that many noises, but
no,
so many people are actually saying his name for jobs that somehow you really think, well... Is he actually looking for a career in management? Now, he's 43 now.
43, yeah.
Now, if you look around Europe, there are people who are younger than him that have been in management for over a decade.
Mm.
And
so he's competing against.
Yeah, and people who are winning titles. I mean, you've got, look at, go to France, and you've got Leonardo Jardim.
Yeah, there. He's 42.
Yeah, he's top of the table at the moment with Monaco. I think as we speak, though, PSG were 2-0 up there.
Yeah.
Top of the table, has been most of the season, got them playing really well in Europe as well.
Got over a decade of experience.
Managing
first teams.
He's won a title, all right, in Greece, where you're meant to win titles when you're at the team. But he was still in that job.
Yeah.
But he's come through from the third division of Portuguese football, coaching the youth team. Doing it that way, coming through. Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah.
Well, his background.
Thomas Tuchel, 43.
Yeah.
Same age as Ryan Giggs.
Yeah.
He's been managing first team football since 2009. And before then, he was managing under 23s, under 19s, under 17s.
Mm.
Mm.
His career was ended short. And so that's why he went into coaching early.
Mm.
He went to university and went into coaching early. advantage that those guys have that Giggs doesn't have is that those guys stop playing early, and Giggs continue to play.
Yeah.
And but the we look at Giggs and say, so when Mark Bartra got the Hull job over Ryan Giggs, apparently over Ryan Giggs,
Marco Silva,
or at least in the eyes of Paul Merson and Phil Thompson, over Ryan Giggs.
Yeah.
Marco Silva's been a coach since 2011.
Mm. Yeah.
He's got like nearly we've got 6 years of experience.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, the fact that he's 39
as well.
He's younger than Ryan Giggs.
Yeah.
And he's got more experience than Ryan Giggs.
Mm.
Now, I mean, that doesn't mean that Ryan Giggs doesn't have a role, and doesn't mean that he can't be a good coach.
Mm.
But I agree with you. It's difficult to know, but you don't sense a tremendous appetite from him.
No.
To coach. I mean, he would be doing it by now. He would find a job, even if it was carrying cones. He'd be he'd find a job because he's Ryan Giggs.
Yeah.
You know, doors are open for that guy.
Hmm.
But, you know, for Hull's point of view, they're in a relegation dogfight that they know they're likely to not lose. They're not going to go for a rookie coach.
No.
They'll go for someone with experience.
Yeah.
If it so happens that that guy's actually younger, well, that's really by the by.
Yeah.
How much experience does he have?
If you are hiring because you want someone who can maybe get you about half a dozen loanees from the Man United youth squad, then maybe he is an option.
Yeah.
But even then, does he have the contact still at the club? I mean, I presume he's still difficult an ambassador to say.
Yeah.
Of some kind.
It could be, yeah. Yeah.
I've mentioned Leonardo Jardim at Monaco and Thomas Tuchel there because they're both on this list that I dug up today, which was the list on Oddschecker for who is going to be the new Arsenal manager, which is, you know, betting companies like to put these things out even when there's not actually a position vacant. They'll just put a list of managers. Top of the list there is Allegri, and that seems to be where the gossip is going. And Diego Simeone is behind him. I don't know how real that it could possibly be, but there you go. And Thomas Tuchel is third in the betting there with Sky Bet. He's at 9-1. And Eddie Howe. Eddie Howe is the fourth one on the list.
Yeah, that surprises me a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, Eddie Howe's only been a top flight coach for, less than two seasons.
Yeah.
Mm.
No European experience at all.
No.
I don't doubt he's, he's 39. And he has a lot of experience as a coach as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he's certainly, I would suggest, just more qualified to take over a job than, say, a recently retired. Mm-hmm. Say, I mean, let's not bash Ryan, spend all podcast bashing Ryan Giggs. But let's say Steven Gerrard, who, by the way, is going to be coaching the under-18s next year at Liverpool. So he's doing it the right way.
Yeah,
he's doing it the way that, and that's the other approach that coaches take. They don't necessarily take the smaller jobs down there. They go and they get the youth coach jobs.
Yeah.
And they learn with a club. So the David Wagner approach and countless others.
Yeah.
The guy we're about
Tim
to discuss.
Sherwood. Really. He started at the youth team.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And I know, again, a figure of fun. And
but then again, he probably made it too quickly because I think he was there for about a year before.
But he's actually 85. He's not a young coach.
No, that's true.
This is the thing about young coaches. People say, you talk about young coaches. You know, in England, you know, sometimes you get the impression that a young coach is 45. Whereas in other parts of Europe, that's actually about right. That's where they are.
Do you think our perception of foreign coaches is a bit skewed by people like Pep? And
another example of someone who went through the system.
Zidane.
And Zidane.
Yeah.
Possibly, because in the UK, in England, we've got used to having Wenger and Ferguson, who've been around forever, and who are elderly gentlemen now.
So
having younger coaches around, you don't kind of because especially when the game's been dominated by older guys like that.
But the perception of Pep is that he hasn't had to work for anything. Basically, he's been parachuted into the best jobs in the world.
Yeah, which is nonsense.
Yeah,
I mean, he has got the best jobs in the world, but I mean, you don't just you do have to coach these teams. You do have to be competent. You have to be good at your job in order to do it.
Mm.
I just think that there's a degree of that's just Premier League exceptionalism.
Yeah,
frankly,
mm.
You know, it's not an easy. It's not very easy to get English Premier League players to play in the way that he got them to play at Barcelona and to play them at Bayern Munich because the players aren't as good, frankly. So, anyway, that's my opinion.
Mm.
So, quickly, what's your perception of the way that what British managers have to offer? Do you think there are ones out there that are destined to take control of big clubs? Or do you still think that all the time that the Premier League has the option of going to Europe, it can cherry pick the managers that it wants because it's the best paying league in the world?
I think that any Premier League club, regardless of how much money they've got behind them, and they're all fairly wealthy, let's be fair. I think they will go for the best manager, and I don't think they'd look at passports. So if it is Ryan Giggs, having done his stint at, you know, Manchester United reserves or whatever, or he's gone off to manage Whiteleaf or something like that and start from the bottom off. Not that he would go that low, obviously. But you know,
that'd be a great idea.
It would be great.
Yeah,
it would
be amazing.
But you know what I mean? He's gone off and started. Look, if he's going to come up and come through the ranks that way, or as Terry said, from a kind of a backroom role, I think they would go for that. But yes, of course, they can go for the big names because they want instant success. But if a name offers itself up and it's somebody who can bring that success, and just because they haven't done it all in Europe doesn't mean that they can't do it here. I think we might be surprised by whoever eventually replaces Arsene Wenger.
Mm. I think that clubs in an ideal world would like to promote from within, and I think that they would like to hire native coaches. I think that they would like to be able to do that. They'd like to be sufficiently organised as clubs to be able to do that. The problem is that I don't know whether or not they can do that. The other problem is that there just isn't the availability of people. The coaches just aren't there. The younger coaches that we refer to, guys like Thomas Tuchel, guys like Julian Nagelsmann at Hoffenheim, who's 29, they had their careers shortened massively, and that's why they went into coaching. And the reason why they could do that is because they could afford to pay the fees. It costs £5,000 for somebody to get a UEFA A licence in the UK. It costs considerably less than that in Germany. And you have to back it up with the full tuition and the coaching and all of that. You've got to go to university. You've got to do it. You know, and it's difficult, I think. I think there's a disincentive for younger players who have their careers shortened, but they think that they could make it as a coach. I think they find it very, very tough to be able to break through. And that needs to be addressed. And you need to be able to subsidise it. So young guys, there could be an English Thomas Tuchel out there, easily be an English Thomas Tuchel, you know, 19 years old, his knees knacked, can't play anymore, wants to go into coaching, and he's looking at spending tens of thousands of pounds on his education to get him there, and it's just probably not something that he's going to be able to do.
Mm.
Address that issue, and there's no reason why we can't. I mean, we're all human beings. There's no reason why the English can't produce good coaches, but this has been an issue for some years now, continues to be.
Mm. There are names that you can bring up and say, well, look, these are British coaches doing it the right way, building up experience, and they're on a good career path at the moment. I think two names that I've come across have been Lee Johnson at Bristol City,
mm-hmm.
who's Gary Johnson's son. So Gary Johnson, someone who's, you know, the professional manager down the lower leagues, went off and managed Latvia for two seasons. I think it was Graham Taylor that put them onto him. But his son now is in charge of Bristol City and doing a reasonable job there. He's just almost out of trouble there, out of the relegation. But there's also another, perhaps even more famous son, Anthony Hudson, son of Alan Hudson, who is the manager of New Zealand.
Right. Yeah, I haven't heard of this guy.
No, well, he was actually born in America when Alan Hudson was playing out in Seattle. And And now he's been coaching all across the world. So people with that amount of experience, if they want to come home and manage in the English league setup, they bring something.
Definitely.
They don't just bring, I'm X, I've got all these contacts in the press. They bring something about coaching. And
Paul Clement as well is another example.
That's another great example.
Yeah, and Ian Cather up in Scotland, who's going up at the Hearts. I don't know quite how well he's doing.
It's been shaky, but
he's 30 years old, you know. Young coach, definitely. I mean, they are there. The two examples that you provided are a good example of if your family's in football, and if you're in a position to be able to afford the fees and afford the tuition and get the support that you need.
Yeah, and then, use the experience of what the actual industry is about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then that's a tremendous benefit for you.
Yeah.
And it's breaching those kind of gaps for young coaches. That's the thing that needs to be done. I don't think the Premier League clubs see that as their role. I think they would love it to happen, but I don't think they necessarily see that as their role. And in fairness, it's not. It's kind of the FA's role, to an extent. But, I mean, Steven Gerrard's I think he's doing it the right way. I think by going and coaching the youngsters, going in there and starting from there, I wonder to what extent how much of that is going to Klopp's influence and saying, this is what you should do.
Yeah.
Don't go off and coach some second division team, you know, who isn't very well run and get your reputation completely ruined.
Mm.
You know, come in here, work with us, and coach the youngsters. And that'll be great for the kids as well, because Yeah. Great for him because he'll learn his get his badges and he'll learn how to do that. And the kids will just adore him because, you know, he's Steven Gerrard and they're playing for Liverpool. It'll be great for him. Be really interesting to see where he is in 5 years' time or less.
Okay then. Well, I think we've really like sorted that one out, haven't we? So there you go. That's the problem with British coaches and the fact that there isn't a problem at all with British coaches, is there? So
there is no problem.
There is no problem. There's no problem at all.
There are no problems here.
Right. So it's your turn to do the newsletter this week.
It is indeed. Yes.
FA Cups.
FA Cups. We've got the two semi-finals, and we've got the Clasico as well.
Yeah, and you've got the Scottish semi-finals if you want those as well.
Yeah, which I probably will. Yeah. So it's probably going to be knockout competition heavy and the Clasico. A little bit later. Don't think I'm going to bump the Clasico.
No.
I'm not going to do that. I'm just not that contrarian.
No.
I am pretty contrarian.
You are pretty contrarian.
I'm not going to lie and say I didn't think about it. Right.
Well, okay. Well, then that will be in your inbox on Friday morning if you subscribe. If you don't subscribe, get along to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball. And then just put your email address in there and then you'll be signed up and you'll get all the information on the 7 matches that Terry picks for the weekend. But for now, I think that's all we've got time for. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton and from Terry Fellman, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Ah, mantequilla.
What?
Okay. Mantequilla. Burro is e-o.
Burro.
Burro.
Manuel, por favor, momento.
Si, si, si.
Nothing, dear, I'm just dealing with it.
Oh, I don't know why you wanted to hire him, Basil.
Because he's cheap and keen to learn, dear.